IATSE Local 891 presents Apple Box Talks,
the podcast where we get to talk to the very best in entertainment, the artists and technicians of 891.
From prep to post and everything in between, we create worlds on screens of all sizes.
Welcome to Apple Box Talks. I'm Phil.
And I'm Crystal. And this week we're joined by a builder of worlds, creator of spaces, lead carpenter, Mark Berkshoff, with credits to his name like Mysterious Benedict Society, X-Files, Zoo, Salvation, and Twilight Zone.
So pull up an Apple Box and let's talk. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today on Apple Box Talks. I've been doing a little bit of sleuthing into your background, and you know, yeah, I know. It's a little we checked out your Twitter feed, we checked out your Facebook, and it turns out that you went to Sheridan College and then Niagara College.
Yes,
and those are both in Ontario. Mm-hmm. So you're a Leafs fan?
No.
Oh, good. All
right. Flames?
No. Actually, I grew up liking the Canucks. My brother was a big Pavel Bure fan. So I kind of slid into that.
And that's what dragged you out to the West Coast?
Not so much. I kind of forgot all about that before I moved out here. And then kind of once I started seeing the classic orange jerseys, I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's so. Right.
So yeah. So you came out to Vancouver for film or?
Tangentially, yes. I had finished film school and... I had no desire to work in Toronto because I had spent a 3-month internship at an editing house. And I didn't want to live in Toronto and I didn't want to commute there. That was kind of my only option for work. So I had people tell me that there was opportunities in Vancouver. So I thought I'd just go for it. So I got on a bus and I drove over.
Wow.
So you have an editing background.
Well, in school, that was kind of my focus near the end of my schooling because our final projects were documentaries, and I was both picture and sound editor for that final project, the opportunity for an editing internship came up, so I thought I'd just try it out.
Fantastic.
And you grew up in a small town outside of Toronto, and that's the big city you didn't want to deal with?
That's part of it. Like, I mean, Toronto has the kind of urban suburban sprawl that's kind of like you never know when you've left until suddenly you're home. And then during my internship, I was living at home, and it was a hour and a half, like Greyhound bus ride every morning.
Wow.
Cause I left really early so I could get there on time. And it was pretty brutal. And, at the time I couldn't afford to live in the city. And I didn't want to keep doing that commute. So.
And so you moved to Vancouver, and are you in Vancouver proper or is it?
No, I currently live in, Burnaby.
Burnaby.
Yeah.
And you commute every day out to Langley.
Yeah, actually, one of my first shows, I was doing that. It was like, I think, yeah, I was still a permit, and I was just trying to get my days, and I got picked up by a show out on like the very south end of 264th, and I was living in Vancouver at the time, so that was quite a commute. But right. I got my days, and that's what got me in.
So prior to that, you actually went into BCIT to get your cabinetry making and a Red Seal ticket, yes. Right?
Yeah. So what happened after I moved here is I worked a couple of stagehand jobs and picked up what I could, but I ended up having to do other work in the meantime while doing photography, some editing on the side when I could. But I just eventually fell into the trades as I found I had a love for building. And, so I decided, hey, why not jump in? Went to BCIT, joined their foundation program, went through the Red Seal certification, got my went through my apprenticeship, and yeah, actually it was a really good experience, and I learned a lot there, and kind of ended up falling back into film, not entirely by accident, but through fortuitous circumstance.
You met the right person?
Pretty much, yeah. There was actually a guy who was in my fourth year class at BCIT, who I was actually in a cabinet making competition at the school, and he was there as well. And I was kind of fed up with my boss at the time. And so I decided, I was like looking for any work anywhere. And he was like, oh, come work with me. My company is looking for guys who are qualified. So I went and worked at, it was a high-end cabinet company, and I was working there for about a year, and then suddenly he disappeared. Interesting. So he came in a couple weeks later to pick up some of his tools, and I asked him, so where are you working? I hear you're doing sets or something. It's like, oh yeah, I'm working for IATSE. I was like, oh really? Cause I had thought about it, but I didn't really know whether I was qualified or what, you know, what it involved. And he said to me, he's like, you should go for it. Like you're a shoo-in, you know, you'll be running the place, you know, in a year. So I was like, sure. So I looked up the application online, and with a lot of encouragement from my wife, I went for it.
Can you walk us through, you mentioned earning your permittee days. Can you paint us that picture? What was that like for you?
Getting my days for the as a permit, I needed at the time the union required only 60 days to earn your days towards becoming a member. So, and it was super busy, and I'm assuming because it was 60 days, we were desperate for people. There was so much work and so few people. It was like, I got on my first show, I got 57 days. So, and it was a real gut punch on, when I got that layoff notice on,
3 days to go.
Three days to go.
Yeah. Oh, so close.
And my foreman knew it. And my foreman knew it. And he was like, I'm really sorry. Yeah. But I have to let you go. We were like, he desperately tried to hold on to me.
And yeah, it used to be really hard for people to accumulate the days. But since 2016, I think you started in 2016 with IATSE, we've just experienced incredible growth and constant work. So you joined at the right time.
Yeah.
Like, absolutely.
Yeah.
And to that experience, I mean, you speak to something really important when you say, you know, you got onto the set or into the shop and you realized quite quickly that you had probably a little more experience than some of the other people there. And so there's a lot of mentorship that happens on the job. Can you speak to that?
Yeah. I mean, it ends up being, you do have such a wide variety of skill levels and backgrounds on set, and particularly in the construction department, because you got guys coming out of, you know, the framing world or the cabinet world or, you know, forming or, you know, or just coming out of laboring in the construction world, and they got in. And, you know, the guys who tend to succeed are the guys who are there and willing to learn. And, like it, you can come in and be the best carpenter in the world, but if you are not willing to, you know, listen and learn new skills, you're not going to survive. Because, like, particularly in film, you know, every day is different. Like, sure, you're building, you know, sometimes it feels like you've built a million 4-foot by 8-foot flats that have been the same, but, you know, one day you're building a spaceship, one day you're building, you know, a jewelry store, or
An
MRI machine. Yeah. Yeah. Which was one of my first big jobs. And, and you have to be willing to try new things. And also draw on the experience of others. I find there's definitely, you know, proud people, and there's egos in the film industry. Like, I'll be the first to admit that, but that type of attitude of, like, you know, like, I'm the best and I don't have to listen to anyone, it doesn't work, it doesn't last long, because you're working as a team and you're trying to get it you're working to tight deadlines with potentially really complicated sets, and you know, you all have to do your part to get it done. And I mean, I went from, like, I was really surprised on my first show that I was like going in there and, you know, I didn't know what I was doing in the sense of film and stuff like that, but I knew how to operate all the tools and all the procedures to make turn that raw lumber into what they wanted. I just had to do it. And then being able to help other people learn how to do it more efficiently or do it a little bit more accurately or whatever like that, and be able to contribute right off the bat without having to just sit there and wait, wait for someone to tell me what to do or how to do it necessarily.
So you talked about something early on about you had a love of film and television growing up, obviously, you know, love movies and all that. So that led to going to school for broadcasting, film, television, radio, that sort of thing. And then turning to becoming a carpenter, you know, a lot of people in the outside world think of construction and carpentry as, you know, big hammers and putting, you know, whatever together. But you still have that love of film and theater, and you're playing part of the story, right? Mm-hmm. So are you finding, like, through your background, are you able to express your creativity in carpentry in a different way than you would if you were working as a cabinet maker, or is it?
Absolutely. I think that part of that comes from, again, you're working on different things, whether it's spaceships or treehouses, or, you know, whether you're working in a shop or in the woods or on a stage. You've got plenty of opportunities to do different things and come up with different ways to do things, because there's no standard way to build a spaceship. There's not, you know, 16 on center framing and all that. Kind of stuff that you have to deal with, and you're dealing with shapes and geometry that you don't regularly deal with in the real world, which can be a lot of fun. Like there's so many parts of like construction geometry that I not only get to deal with that I would never have gotten to deal with in a practical sense. I get to do it my way, and a lot of the times manually by hand, because like my crew, we don't have a CNC machine at the moment. Like if we have something that really needs to be CNC'd, we farm it out to somebody. But that means we go, okay, well, we need this complicated shape built and done, and all you have is, you know, your hands and the tools in front of you, and you got to figure it out. And that to me is like, I relish the opportunity to do that. Whereas in my experience in real world cabinet making, it's, you know, anything that isn't a straight line or, you know, a basic box gets done by a special machine or an outside contractor. Right. But I get to, and it's, I mean, particularly as a lead now, I get to take a set from drawing to finished product, and I get to decide how it's done, because again, there's no standard way of doing it. When you, when you're making a fake, you know, cockpit or whatever, it's like, you know, you got the art department giving you a drawing. It's like, this is how we want it to look.
Right.
It doesn't matter how you do it. Just make it look like this. So then I get to decide, okay, well, what material is going to be best for that? And what's going to make it strong enough for what they need it for? Because, you know, you might have to make a bed, but then you ask, is anyone ever going to lay in it? No. Okay. So I don't have to worry about it having the same strength as a real bed, for example.
That's incredible. I mean, you're able to pull all of your creative skills together, and it, like, it's not just, wood and hammer and nails, right?
Yeah.
You're actually creating these worlds.
I'm still waiting for the day that I find out I'm working on a show that I'm like, oh, that's the show I really wanted to work on, you know, whether it's some IP that's like I'm really familiar with, or, you know, a writer or director that I admire.
I wanted to actually ask you about one of your credits, Zoo. So Zoo is a show that went, I believe, 3 seasons. And my understanding is it was about animals attacking humans in the middle of a pandemic.
on that show, that was the first show I worked on with my current crew, actually. And yeah, kind of, I came in halfway through season three and I walk into the stage and like one half of the stage, like it's, well, it's the stage is this giant stage and like it's just this giant airplane set. And I'm like, oh, like, so a lot of this show takes place on an airplane or whatever. So I'm asking, like, what's this show about? It's, oh, it's about some like mutant animals or something. And I'm like, okay. And then as it progressed, I started to, like, as different things started coming up, I'm like, what is this show really about? And that was, I think that was a CBS show.
I think so.
Yeah, and it was on broadcast. So you don't always get to be working on something. And then while you're working on it, it starts to broadcast. And that was the first time that it happened for me. So I was able to like kind of watch, you know, the earlier episodes of the season while I was making the last few and started to see, well, like, to be fair, that show was bananas, but it was a lot of fun. Like me and my wife both actually watched it like right through the, through to the end of the season and really enjoyed it. Like, just for the fact that it was really just out there. Yeah. And it was a fun show to work on because of that kind of atmosphere of like, we're really throwing everything against the wall and seeing what sticks. Like it was really just, you know, we got to make these sets that were like, there's, you know, that kind of based in that film reality of like where things aren't quite how they would be in real life, but you know, they're also not completely science fiction out of this world. So it was a nice introduction for me. That's a lot of fun.
So the description we used for you in the beginning, in our intro, builder of worlds, creator of spaces, that's probably going to be your RPG.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
You did talk about the moment of watching something you created on film. Do you remember the first time you saw something you built on TV or in the theater?
I think back to my first show, which was Ice, which was a online streaming only for like DirecTV or something like that. Right. So nobody saw it. and you know, if anybody asked me what I worked on, I'd say it and they're like, what? I remember specifically, cause it was a show about diamonds and, right. And you know, jewelry and, like kind of criminals and all the intrigue and stuff there. And what ended up happening is we're building this really big jewelry store set and there's all these glass cases we have to build. And there was the main one that was like this big box, the big display. And then the back of it had to have like a compartment for a shotgun to fall out. And what happened was the production designer came into the shop and he looked at what had been built. Like I wasn't in charge of this particular project at the time. I was just helping out. He comes in, he's like, no, that's not at all what it's supposed to look like. And he starts explaining what he wants. And, you know, my foreman and the carpenter who is kind of taking the lead on that particular project, they're like listening and they're like, I don't know. I'm not sure what he's talking about. And so I felt like I was tracking with the production designer. So I was like, you know what? I think I got this. I know what you want. All right. And then he leaves and then they're like, you understood what he was talking about? I'm like, yeah, do this. Right. And I do a little drawing and they say, you think that's what he wanted? And I'm like, absolutely sure. So I go and I build it and, you know, and he comes in and he's like, oh, that's exactly what I wanted. And I felt like so proud. Right. And it wasn't like it was a super complicated thing, but I was so proud. And then when I watched it on camera, I was like, it doesn't really look like much. It just looks like a box with some glass on it. But at the same time, it was really like, I was like, there's such a big story behind that thing that, right. You know, it gets, let's say 30 seconds on screen sometimes, right. if you're lucky. Right. And, but it's still, you know, you still get that feeling of, there's a little bit of pride of like, you know, it's there. Like, and I think that that's part of the magic of building a set.
Yeah, and that develops over time, right. Over various shows.
And you mentioned a while ago that you're part of a team, and you're with your certain team. Construction tends to operate like a hive, and they bring in people as they need that to expand upon their group, but you have a core group that sort of goes from show to show, right?
Yeah.
And that inner confidence with working together well with other people probably plays a large part of that, right?
Yeah. Like we, my, the crew that I work with, our core crew, like from just the construction departments, probably about, I don't know, between 20 and 30 guys. And we, you know, it's, our group has changed obviously over the years, because, you know, people either, you know, find other things they're going to do. They retire, you know, they decide to go work for another crew, whatever, whatever it is. But there tends to be a group of kind of a lot of the guys who stick around are, you know, the guys who are going to make decisions, and you get to know, you know, who's good at what, and, you know, what people's strengths are and where you can kind of put them in order to make everything come together in the best way possible. Like, you know, there's a guy who's, you know, he's not the best, let's say, at interpreting drawings, but he can, you know, he can put a flat together in no time flat. I just heard
for
that.
For a listener who has no idea what film construction or you know, that's a bit of slang. Flat.
Yeah, right? Flat is basically just a wall, like a set wall, which is basically just some 1x4 with it looks kind of like a regular wall, but it's a little bit chintzier, made out of 1x4 and 3/16 plywood. But it's kind of like the bedrock of everything we build, right? Of flats of different sizes that can be stitched together. And, you know, like they can, it's one of those things that seems so simple, but it can be done wrong. Yeah. And it can be done slowly. And when you get somebody who could do it right quickly, it's really good. It's good to have somebody who can do that. You know, and when you have somebody who you know, can do that, and you've got 150 flats you got to build, you throw them at it. And, you know, and then you find somebody else who's going to do the doors. Like, it's good to have a dynamic team who have a lot of different skills. You know, you can draw on them, and some, you know, some shows you're going to have a person, you know, you use a lot because they're really good with, you know, getting curves done on a router. You throw everything at them. And then some shows you got, you know, a door guy or a guy who's really good at making, you know, rough sawn lumber into, you know, tree houses or something, right?
Mark, can you tell us, this has been such an enlightening conversation, by the way. Really appreciate you being here. Tell us, what one piece of advice would you give someone trying to get into film?
Well, first of all, just go for it. From my perspective in the construction department, if there is somebody who is listening who, has worked in construction, who wants to work in the set building, field, like I can almost guarantee that they can do it, right? Not because it's not difficult, but because, you know, like there are people who are gonna help you, and there are, like, it's like, you don't have to be afraid of the big, you know, the big scary mysterious film industry, because it's just other people trying to get a job done. And yeah, sometimes you're under a lot of pressure, sometimes the hours are long, but in the end you're still, you know, putting, you know, screws in wood, and you're just building something just like you would anywhere else. And if you can do it in the real world, I guarantee you can do it in film. So that would be my first thing, is, you know, there's nothing to be afraid of, and to just go for it. And the other is, be prepared for the long hours and the tight deadlines, because it can be a little different, to go from, you know, the regular, as it, not necessarily 9 to 5, but 40-hour work week to, you know, 60 and above when you're getting to the end of a building schedule. But you know, it takes a certain amount of fortitude, but it is rewarding, it's interesting, and I think the one thing that I would have told my former earlier self before I joined the film industry is that it can be a career. Mm-hmm.
So be fearless, go for it.
Yes.
That's great.
Sure.
So we're sitting here in the Union Hall and IATSE 891, you joined, I believe in 2016 is when you got your membership. What does a union mean to you?
I've always been a working class guy. Anytime I've worked, it's always been in situations where you're working alone, like not necessarily by yourself, but you are an employee on your own against your employer necessarily. And that's not that relationship is always hostile, but you're constantly having to fight by yourself to get fair treatment, to get a raise in pay, to have your voice heard and your concerns heard, and to get more than just the bare minimum that the law requires. And being in a union for me, gives me an assurance or it reassures me, because I know that I have the thousands of other members of the union who will have my back if I'm being treated unfairly by my employer. It's not just me against my employer. And, you know, we've got the union, you know, obviously doing bargaining and getting, you know, fair agreements and stuff like that, which is great. But and that obviously helps every member to hopefully get the best wage and the best benefits for the work that they're doing. But in general, there is a sense that, you know, we are together.
Fantastic. And you came into this industry with a high level of education and skills that have been taught as a Red Seal carpenter. The union offers a ton of training opportunities. Do you see yourself taking advantage of that? Is that?
Yeah. Actually, right now I'm between shows and I'm voluntarily kind of taking the opportunity to get as much training as I can that's available to me. I have been a forklift operator in the past, but I've never had my ticket. So I finally decided now's a good time to get my ticket and get my telehandler ticket. I'm looking at getting a second category. So I'm looking at what other categories require. So I've looked at special effects and props. So I'm working on my firearms license. I've got my dangerous goods. I just got my dangerous goods, my WMIS, looking into pyrotechnics. I'm just trying to buff my stats, as it were.
And that's another RPG reference. You can go to rwork.ca and check out the skills calculator. We've been telling people about this all the time. Yeah, if they're looking for a second category, if they're already members, you may have skills that are listed there that might lead you to a department you didn't even think about.
I was looking at the site there and I did try it out just to see what it would tell me, see if it had something that I didn't know. But right. The two top ones were actually props and special effects, which I was already interested in.
All right. Success.
Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for your time today, Mark.
No problem.
It's been great to get to chat and learn about your career and what it takes to build a whole new world, even if just for a day.
And that's a wrap on Apple Box Talks for another episode. To get your career rolling in the film and TV industry, check out rwork.ca.